And this is Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9, KTCB Tillamook 89.5, coastradio.org, wherever you are in the world. Of course, this goes out to Carol and Tessa and the whole Faddle family. And it also want to send out special wishes to the family of Imogen Barton, old friend who just passed. And I want to remember a couple of local folks here who just died. Michael Foster, what a guy. We used to dance in back of the Liberty Theater to Pink Martini. Many, many folks here know Michael, librarian, antique dealer, art dealer, art collector, I should say, traveler. And the other local person who was in my life is Hal Snow. And that was kind of, both of them were a surprise, but Hal was a bit of a shock. And we go back about 42 years. And so makes us remember at this time of year how important it is to value one another and to open our hearts and our minds. And with that, we want to send healing wishes to Paxton and to Pierce and to Susan and anyone else you have in your heart. It is time for Arts Live and Local. Well, I just got the news today about the United Nations and Israel and the Palestinians. And you can check that out for yourself. But I'm going to dedicate this show to peace, especially in that part of the world, since we're celebrating Hanukkah and Christmas and light and other holidays as well. Thanks for being here, folks.
Same face in the Gaza. It's the same face I see out in California. Same face in Jericho. It's the same face I see down in Mexico. Same face in Tel Aviv. It's the same face I see out in New Jersey.
So many places all share the same faces. East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem, Shalom.
Jerusalem,
That's David Broza, East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem. Shalom, Salam. May there be peace. He's a quite well-known Israeli artist. He's known all over the world. And that's my dedication, my hope, my prayer. And one of the ways we make things come true is by bringing them out into the open. And my guest, Mary Lou McCauley, does that quite well with her poetry. So welcome, Mary Lou.
Thank you, Carol.
I'm delighted to have you here. Now, have you been on
camera? Mm-hmm. No.
Oh, my God. We have a radio virgin. Yahoo!
I hope I look okay.
I'm telling you, a radio virgin right by Christmas. This is pretty amazing. Okay.
We
didn't even plan it that way. But Mary Lou is a very important part of the local poetry scene here in Astoria and Oregon and the world, because that's basically what it is. It's an art form that seems much like folk dancing, to come in waves. And for a while, nobody was talking about poetry. And then suddenly there was, I don't even know what happened.
Just more exposure.
Yeah, so there was this revitalization and all kinds of things are happening. So I wanted Mary Lou to come and talk to us about what's going on here. And I know it's going on in other communities in the area, too. If you call in and tell somebody who answers the phone, they can bring me in a note and announce where your special poetry readings are. I'm sure the Hoffman has something, because they've got everything there. But Mary Lou also has when was that book published?
Last year.
Just last year. Woohoo, nice. Now, is that your first book?
The
yes. Other Door.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
And also she has lots of news. So welcome again. You're
Thank
not a
you.
Virgin anymore. Sorry, it doesn't last very long around here. So tell us first, how long have you been here? Now, I know you were in Cannon Beach, weren't you?
I lived here about 25 years ago, and I was in Cannon Beach. I founded Jupiter's Books,
right,
which was then Macaulay's Used in Rare Books. And then I was up here and left, spent the intervening 25 years trying to get back. So I just wanted to get back to the river and met Robert in Colorado and
brought him back.
Good and actually job. That was Fort George, I think, that helped
sealed the deal. That's we're talking about Robert Paulman, her Mary Lou's husband, who is one of our foremost painters here in the area. So how long have you been living in Astoria?
Six years.
Yeah. Okay. I remember when I found out that you had been the original book person down in Cannon Beach. I was just delighted and hadn't realized that's a wonderful bookstore.
And we went back to visit, and I said, oh my gosh, the ceiling's the same. The door's the same. I mean, it was quite an
Sweet.
Adventure.
And Billy Holtz had it in between, didn't he?
Yeah, I had it, and then John Taylor and Billy. And I know I'm missing a couple, and now Watt.
And now Watt Childress. Wonderful. So it's a great little bookstore in Cannon Beach. So, what is going on here in Astoria on the poetry scene? And then I want you to read some of
them. We have so many recognized, honored, award-winning, talented poets. And I kind of came into it a little bit late. Rick Barna had started an open mic. He was very well known in many scenes in Portland and around the region.
Oh, really? See, I didn't.
Yeah,
know.
He was. I think he's even got a recording. He was just such a great guy,
and he was such a terrific host. He was so unintimidating.
Yeah,
and
generous,
lovely.
Any come one, come all.
Yeah.
So when I came into it, he started the open mic here. It was held on the last Tuesday, and that was in September 2014.
Okay.
And so then I came into it just around the time that I published my book, because I was kind of nervous about things, and just really loved it. It was held at the Event Center. Florence
at the little restaurant.
Portico. Yeah, thank you. And Florence Sage and Jim Dott, and you know, quite an established crew of really wonderful voices. And then when he passed, Jim and Florence again kind of took it up, and we had a meeting, and we gave it a month, and they found us a new venue, which is Winecraft.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's at the foot of 11th Street.
Or Pier 11, yeah.
Yeah.
Just an...
Oh, wait, is it on 10th, actually?
I guess, yeah, it's Pier 11, yeah.
It's Pier 11, but it's on the other end of it, right.
It's easy to find. It's Rebecca Kraft said, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, intimate venue.
Lovely.
Just perfect. So we've been doing that since July, I think, June or July.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did you end up being? were you away Florence, and they nominated you? Is that
Florence just volunteered me?
I see.
And I said, okay, yeah, I'll MC for a little while, and I really love it.
Mm,
I mean, I just really enjoy it. We've had up to like 20 poets come and read,
and it is a really nice venue for that.
Yes.
Also,
right.
It's dedicated to the poetry when you're there, as opposed to the TVs going and people.
I know.
Stuff.
It was a little bit charming, I mean, in the Portico, to have NASCAR racing going on in the in the background, and you know, waitresses calling and drawing beer. Right. I mean, that was okay, but
at
Winecraft, it's beautifully lighted. Mm-hmm. We've got a little sound amp, so everybody brings poems to read.
So yeah, how does it work?
We have a sign up at 6:45, and it's on. And now it's held on the first Tuesday. We have a sign up at 6:45. Readings start at 7, and from 7 to 8:30. We try to limit everyone to 5 minutes, but
I've been there.
Yeah, you.
yeah. Well, I remember. I think it was just last year at Christmas time when Rick brought all these little presents, and you had to give a poem, and you'd reach into a box and pull out some outrageous little foo-foo thing.
Yes.
And I would have given mine away, but when he died, which was a shock, it was, and he was from Queens too, which endeared me, endeared him to me too, because he spoke that way sometimes. But he, I kept my little, I don't know, it's one of those car things that you get for children.
Sure,
just silly little things, but it was just the spirit of bringing people together and taking
exactly.
that pressure off.
And that's why it's now called Rick's Open Mic.
Sweet.
And we had when we began it again, it was kind of a dedication, and I get kind of confused. Jim and Florence and Robert, everyone had. And I believe his daughter came over from Portland.
Wow. Nice. So there's a mailing list. Who is that? Who does?
The email list goes through, well, they can contact me, but it's Kat Dudley.
Mm-hmm.
And she sends out a couple of reminders. But if someone wants to be on the list, they can email me.
And that would be?
That would be at... Well, Mary Lou McCauley, and it's MMCAULEY05@gmail.com, and I'll make sure that they get on the list.
Okay. It's very handy, because she doesn't send out a lot, but she does remind you it's coming.
Right.
And then sometimes there's some very sweet thoughts in there as well.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would love to hear something of yours, and maybe you could give us a little background on it, and then you'll have some other news to share with us as well.
I will. So. I brought a few things. That's usually the famous last words at any party. I have a few things to show you. These poems were written for the Upper Left Edge.
Oh, yes.
And their home issue. It was dedicated to home.
Okay.
And this first one is called Susie. I knew him. He had an old dog named Susie. Her hips were weak, so she wove down the sidewalk with a flirtatious gait, a soft, silky, big blonde girl. They're both gone now. There's a pile of old blankets, plastic pails, black trash bags in a heap by the curb. Someone has been hired to haul this home away. Each time they lift an armful, golden dog hair, backlit by the sun, swirls away, spins and tangles to the pavement, and disappears.
Wow. Okay, all you dog lovers, and especially those of us who have recently lost our dogs.
I have another one for all of them.
A group of us. And it seems right here at KMUN, three of us, all our dogs died within a couple of weeks of one another. That's lovely.
Thanks.
Now, did you have someone specific in mind for that?
I did. It was when I was working at the gallery, River Sea Gallery, and I looked out onto the street, and it was one of those things where someone was being, his home was being taken away, I mean, on his way. And sometimes poems will just kind of drop in and be there in full. Sometimes they need a little coaxing. This was one that just dropped in and was there. So I wrote it and left it.
So have you been writing poetry, thinking poetry, being a poet forever?
Forever. Yes, I've always written. My mother, she was a single mother, and she would play symphonies when she cooked our dinner, which our dinners were quite simple, so that was really wonderful. And I would stand there and chatter away at what I could see. And I think just self-preservation, she finally one day just kind of patted me and said, "Why don't you go write that down?" Music is very kind of, I can listen to music and I can see things a little bit more fully.
Wow.
And I kind of credit her with that.
Isn't that interesting? Because some of us need everything quiet before we can focus. But what made me ask that question even, I mean, it's a normal question, but also when you said some of the poems just come.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, yeah, well, that's because you're a poet. You know, I'm a dancer, so when I see something, I may want to move to it. But that's fantastic. Now, did you study writing at some point, or just
An avid reader, know, humanities major. But mostly it's just reading the voices I like and listening to different poets that I like. And I think I've read, I don't know who I'm quoting, but they said poetry is the language of the invisible. And I think we all see a different way. And some of us translate that into dance. Some translate that into verse, some translate that into electronics or painting. I was always the one in our family that would look out and see something that nobody else saw. You know, an eagle in a tree or something. You know, I was very watchful.
Yeah.
Not real talkative, but very watchful.
Yeah, very observant.
So I think that's pretty much where that is.
Yeah. So, and most of your inspirations come from something. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, give us another one, please.
Well, this one also was for the upper left edge. It's called Amy Danger Waved Me Home. Sometimes there are days when you think you know exactly what to expect, but then the day you thought you had tamed jumps the fence, hurries off to go visit the neighbor, and strands you when it decides to take the train home. Well, that's how it was for me one rainy afternoon, derailed, irritated, pouty, just want to get home, my mantra. Couple more stop signs, couple more left turns, then, at the next intersection, she's in her car, both arms waving, with a huge hugging grin lighting up her windshield. What I remember now about that day, it was the day that ended perfectly when Amy Danger waved me home.
Wow.
Do you know Amy?
I don't.
Oh, she just got it.
She lives here somewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, well, that's wonderful. That description of her, the, with the arms and the big smile.
It just flipped my whole day.
Wow. Yeah. And that can happen, damn it. Mm-hmm. If we let it.
Yes.
If we're not too busy.
Too busy
on our,
pouting.
We're looking at our machines in our hands or whatever.
Yeah. So. I don't have one.
No, me neither. I didn't know that. All right. We'll talk. Yeah, neat. So now are those two poems in your book as well?
No, they're going to be in the next one. I'm working on a new one, maybe for spring or summer. Takes a little doing, and Christy Payne designed my book.
Nice.
Lucky me.
That'll be wonderful. So were these written since you published?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people won't know. Why don't you tell them briefly what The Upper Left Edge is?
Well, The Upper Left Edge is an alternative coastal paper started in Cannon Beach. Was it Billy that started it?
I believe it was the Reverend Billy Holtz.
Billy and
Uncle Mike Burgess.
Uncle Mike, right.
Yes. Both of whom are gone too early.
But boy, are they remembered.
They established the Tolovana Arts Colony.
Right.
They were incredible.
And it's published maybe occasionally quarterly. I see it showing. I think that's what Watt's trying to do is bring it in quarterly.
Yeah, and Watt picked it up and said, no, we can't let this
can't
die.
Let this go. And it's got, you know, opinions and beautiful writing and articles and
sketches. Sally LaCaff used to do stuff.
And you'll see it at the Scorcher and the library. I think it's a delivery.
Yeah.
So you can find it.
And KMUN.
KMUN, of course. Yeah. What am I thinking?
Wonderful. So why don't you tell us now a little bit about, you mentioned that we have a new poet laureate
in
Oregon, which I was not aware of.
Well, the governor chose the new, I believe she announces it every poetry month, or every April, which is National Poetry Month. So she announced, I don't know a whole lot about it, but her name is Elizabeth Woody. She was born into the Navajo Nation and has lived in Oregon most of her life, but she's a member of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. Mm-hmm. She's got several books out. I've got to look up. I've read one of her poems, and they're very much, again, the language of the land, the language of the tribe. I mean, what I mean is storytellers, you know, kind of like
tradition.
I joke about being at the library and being with my tribe. I'm surrounded by storytellers.
Nice. I love it.
So I'm hoping we can get her.
Ooh, yes.
To town.
Do you think she lives in Portland or?
I believe she is from Portland,
okay.
But I think everybody kind of reaches out so to have her visit their place in April, which is the poetry month.
Of course. We'll take her whenever.
We would take her in May.
Exactly. And I guess that's part of her, quote, job.
Yes, it is.
Because to...
Right.
And again, it is exciting because in the schools and in the communities, because here, as I'm sure you know, I'm sure Florence and Jim both told you about the River Theater.
Uh-huh.
How we used to have Monday mics, open mics, and it was a wonderful thing with a guest, and then and a bunch of Job Corps kids came in on it too, and that was just delightful. We meet over there,
right?
And of course, that's been gone. I can't even remember 6-8 years.
Right, but I also think that just by coming to an open mic and people can, you know, you can come in, you don't have to. You can bring a favorite poem.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be your own.
No. Right. And you can just listen. Yeah. But there's something about that energy of being in the same room at the same time. And there have been many times after the open mic, don't talk with your hands, that I have gone home and written something else.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's very stimulating.
That reminds me of the Fisher Poets Gathering, which a lot of the people, because it's grown enormously since the beginning, and a lot of the people who come now and write poetry and song, but especially the poetry and prose, never wrote a stitch before.
Right.
They were commercial fishermen, and that's what they did. But this idea of being with a bunch of people who were doing this, and it's like, whoa. I can talk about all those feelings I have, and everybody is really interested. So.
I think that's the thing maybe that sets poetry, and maybe that's why it's coming into the front, because, you know, so many times, you know, you had to be educated. You had to know a sonnet and a Quantrain and, you know, all those different things. And people now are understanding it's a way to share what they see, mm-hmm. share what they feel, mm-hmm. share with who they want to touch. And it's all valid.
Yeah, yeah. So let's remind people again, the first Tuesday of each month, so the next one is going to be January 3rd. Mm-hmm. It's at the Winecraft on the foot of 10th and the river. And it's 6:45 if you want to sign up.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, if you just want to go and sit and enjoy the company and the delightful poetry, some of it, again, just like with Fisher Poets, some of it is poignant, some of it is funny, some is obscure.
Well, one night we got locked into limericks.
Oh, my goodness.
And that returned for the next month briefly. But that was a lot. It was hysterical.
I can imagine. Oh, gosh, that's trippy. Yeah. Well, got one more poem for us, maybe?
I do, actually. I'm going to...
Or two if you planned on that.
Okay, yeah.
Sure.
Well, I will. Don't get to be on the radio very
often. Sure, give us a name of a poem.
This one is called No McDonald's Corporate Farm, and I dedicated that to our local farmers.
Wonderful.
In the book, mm-hmm. because we've benefited so much from them. So it's No McDonald's Corporate Farm. Antoine de Zuperay wrote of what would happen to penned ducks or chickens when the seasonal wild migrations began. They would leap about, magnetically drawn to the great tug of instinct and memory. Do they still? I doubt it, because now they are packaged tight in small cages, no leaping room at all. In constantly lighted rooms, their eyes may as well be stitched shut. For them, there's no sunlight, no starlight. They drink through lopsided beaks, but only measured food designed to speed their destined cycle. Whoever thought we could desire to feed ourselves on such misery and have health? Find a real farm, when mild migrations are above you, when a hen at least has a chance to leap. Invite yourself to dinner. You may taste starlight.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I so appreciate when someone like yourself or one of the singer-songwriters expresses my feelings as I never could in words. Thank
well, let
you
me just
very
do
much.
This last one, because
sure.
I know we've kind of got some times. This my book was called Poems and Glimpses.
Where can people?
They can get it at Lucy's.
Okay, in Astoria.
This is called, and this is for all the dog folks in our hearts, and all our dogs in our hearts. So this is called Running with Robert. Robert came out, went down the steps, and started his run, heading down the street, around the corner, and was soon out of our sight. I worried that it was a mistake to let Juno watch him run away. She raised her head, ears and eyes focused as he turned the corner, and for a moment I thought she would slowly get to her feet and try to follow. Speaking her name, I touched her head and rubbed at her ears. "No," I said softly, "you stay here with me." Without taking her eyes off the street, she settled back to the worn porch deck. Probably even then, she was hearing his distant footfalls. Within the heart of a dog, no matter the age, the desire to run is always ready, an electrical current switched on by a whistle, a clap, or the unmistakable promise of let's go. It is a passionate get-sick-without-it desire, and because of that, she would have followed him in her stiff, rolling 16-year-old gait. But I know that she was running, too. She runs beside or ahead of him, never behind. Her stride is long and low, wolfy. New, brighter blood massages her heart, and she feels each leaf and pebble on the pavement. Her ears and nose, triggered by instinct and ancestry, know there have been two raccoons right there, that the cat Hercules pounced on something in that tuft of grass. A crow bounced walk off to the left. And all of this she holds within that slim, aging body of soft hair, yellow teeth, and tender feet. So she's running with Robert right now, lying against my feet, watching the street. It was not a mistake to let her see him out of sight. And when he comes back, she'll come inside and take a great, long drink of water. Mm-hmm. She has run with him before, and like a favorite dream, she will run with him each day. The energy-ripe blood will fill her heart, and while we wait for him on the porch, the breeze will carry her heartbeat.
Oh, Mary Lou, that is wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
I gather that was a dog of yours.
Yes. Yeah. She died just before we moved here.
Yeah. She was... Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. I was very fortunate. Jim Dott wrote a poem when my dog died just a couple of months ago. He wrote a special poem for him. And that it's just, it really brings it home.
Mm-hmm. So
that was a beauty, though. I love the image of the dog watching and running
mm-hmm.
within.
Yep,
as we so many nights when the dogs are lying, you know, on the floor and they start twitching
right.
and moving and making sounds and you're laughing going, look at them go.
They're doing something with us.
Absolutely.
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 Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in. This, my guest is Mary Lou McCauley, and she is the MC at Rick's Poetry Mic, which is the first Monday of Tuesday of each month, January 3rd coming up. And it is at Winecraft in Astoria, the foot of 10th Street on the river. And everybody is welcome. If you want to sign up to read, come at 6:45. It's good anyway to come and schmooze. And the poetry starts at 7 o'clock. And you can contact Mary Lou. And Kat Dudley will put you on the mailing list, and you can find out what's going on. Or just for this first month, if you don't want to get any more lists, just come on over. And I didn't get any phone calls, but I know there's poetry going on in various other communities mm-hmm. too. It's a lovely way to spend an evening. And Mary Lou's book again is called "The Other Door." And you can get that at Lucy's Books in Astoria. And maybe contact Mary Lou if mm-hmm. you're not in Astoria and you want to know how to get a book.
Absolutely.
So, and your email again was Mary Lou.
It's mmcauley05@gmail.com.
Okay. mmcauley05 at gmail.com. Great.
Thank you
so
Carol.
Much for coming in. This
Thank
was
you
delightful.
So much.
I'm glad we actually had so much time.
I know.
It was
Yikes.
Great.
We did. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And I have plenty of music for you and maybe a story. See if you recognize this.
Alleluia, alleluia, alleluia.
One Hanukkah light in memory of the miracle of the first Hanukkah night. Monday, December 7th. Last night was wonderful. The place was strewn with flowers. From Pim for Mummy, from Mr. Van Dan and Mr. Dussel for Mummy, from Mr. Van Dan, from Mrs. Van Dan, and from Pim and Mr. Dussel for Mrs. Van Dam. Mummy also got a pack of cigarettes and a bar of chocolate. Peter and Margot and I had fudge, and Margot and I each got a lovely sewing box, a bar of chocolate, and a silver dish. I also got a lock for my diary. Mr. Van Dam made a wooden candlestick. Because of the shortage of candles, we only had them alight for 10 minutes. But it is all right, as long as you have the song. Wasn't it a miracle? Wasn't it a miracle? Isn't it a miracle?
Thank you.
Yeah, well, Graham figured it out. That indeed is the throat-singing Jingle Bells, and that's a Bela Fleck and the Flecktones album, Jingle All the Way. You never know what you're going to get, but we've got good stuff here. We also heard from Andrea Markovici with from the album I Am Anne Frank, and that was the first Hanukkah night, diary entry, December 7th, 1942. Thank you, Susan, in New York. And Handel's Judas Maccabeus, you know, the other oratorio that Handel's famous for. And that, of course, was Hallelujah, Amen, which I sang in high school. Maybe some of you did as well. Right now, I have a story for you. And I want to give a thanks to my good friend Debbie, who whenever she finds a book she thinks I'll like, children's books or otherwise, she gets them for me. So this is 12 years ago, Christmas Tapestry by one of our favorite authors and illustrators, Patricia Polaka. And it's a crossover story, so stay tuned. There are those who say there is no balance in the universe and that all things happen randomly, without purpose. Take, for instance, one Jonathan Jefferson Weeks. He was most upset that his family came all the way from Memphis, Tennessee, when his father accepted the position of pastor at the New Baptist in Detroit. Even though their new home was on the outskirts, it was still Detroit. Nothing like Tennessee. What possible good reason could there be for leaving home and coming here? Jonathan Jefferson Weeks' father's church in Memphis had been so beautiful, new and gleaming. Everyone had loved to come to his father's services, and Jonathan loved his school. He had just made it on the soccer team. And even though he was a PK, a preacher's kid, his friends there didn't treat him any differently from anyone else. Here in Detroit, Michigan, his father's new church was practically falling down. It was rickety and old, and the parsonage was right next door. Here, everything about their life screamed PK. "Why did we come here, Daddy?" Beth asked her father at dinner one night. "The church looks awful. Nobody comes to services." "The deacons sent your father here because this little church is in such need of a new life," Jonathan's mother said. "Your father made our church in Memphis into something beautiful, didn't he? You should have seen it when we first arrived there." "Couldn't have been as bad as this place," Jonathan said. "Oh, but it was, Jonathan. Worse," his father smiled. Their parents took them into the living room and pulled out a photo album from one of the packing boxes. Jonathan and Beth couldn't believe their eyes. Their father was right. The Tennessee church had been worse, far worse. "How did you do it, Dad?" Jonathan asked. "Just the way I'm going to do it here. But I need both of you to help me. There's the hard work that is going to take to repair and rebuild this church. But I'll also need you to be cheerful and brave. When you see what we're going to do to this church, your spirits will be lifted." Beth and Jonathan tried to smile. "I predict that by, let's see, this very Christmas, the church will be something that we will all be proud of," their father said. "When it is finished, people will come. You'll see." Even though Beth and Jonathan missed Memphis, they threw themselves into the tasks that were assigned to them. For that whole summer, they both helped clear out trash, cut back bushes, mow the lawns, and plant bulbs for the next spring. They scrubbed floors, washed walls, and even helped with the painting. When school started, they were so involved with the rebuilding of the church, they didn't even miss their old friends. They were making new ones. By fall, not only was the church looking better, but Sunday services were getting more and more crowded. Jonathan's father was just what this neighborhood needed. Folks were very friendly now, and everyone was anxious to help. Even Jonathan's new classmates came to help paint. It seemed that everything that the neighbors and friends and family did was turning the church into a beautiful place. As fall stretched into winter, the church was almost finished. Jonathan's father was right. It would be perfect for Christmas. "Here, Dad," Jonathan said as he handed up a loaded paintbrush to his father on the stepladder one December day. Reverend Weeks dabbed the last spot of paint on the sacristy wall. "There. Now the artist can paint the wonderful scene we've planned," he said. "It's going to be a glorious painting of our Lord." Jonathan could hardly wait to see the painting, and it would be done in time for Christmas Eve. Jonathan walked over to the window and watched the snow steadily falling outside. "I've heard that a blizzard may be coming, Dad, and here in Michigan a blizzard can be real bad." "I've heard that, too. But the parsonage is warm and cozy, and so is our new church," Reverend Weeks said as he hugged Jonathan. "It won't bother us, will it?" That next week brought the worst snow that had been seen in Detroit in 25 years. One morning, Mr. Brown, the caretaker, knocked at the parsonage door. He looked full of dread. "Reverend Weeks, come quickly." Jonathan, Beth, and their parents rushed next door. As they entered the church, they all gasped. A dark water stain covered the sacristy wall, right where the painting was to be. "Ice built up on the edge of the roof and held back water," Mr. Brown said sadly. "Standing water that ran into the building and down the sacristy wall." "How can this be happening?" Mrs. Weeks cried. "The artist we commissioned to do the painting was going to start tomorrow." "Isn't there anything we can do?" the Reverend asked Mr. Brown. "We can chip the ice to let out the standing water on the roof." He lightly pushed at the watery wall. There was a huge crack, a rush of water, and a piece of plaster fell with a thud. "Dad!" Jonathan cried out. "Now there's a big ugly hole in the wall right where everybody will see it. I even see wooden slats." "I know a plasterer, Mr. Zucker. He'll be able to fix it for us," Mr. Brown said. "Before Christmas Eve?" Jonathan asked, full of hope. "No, sir," Mr. Brown said. "This here wall needs to dry out first. The plastering may not be until spring." "I knew something would spoil our Christmas," Jonathan cried. "Now, now, I'll call Mr. Zucker anyway. He may have a different solution," Mr. Brown added softly. Later that night, Reverend Weeks sat on the edge of Jonathan's bed. "I miss home," Jonathan cried. "I know you believe God always has a plan, but what plan could have brought us here?" Jonathan sobbed. "We worked so hard, and then God sent a blizzard. I don't understand." "Well, son, although we don't always understand, the universe unfolds as it should," his father said as he rocked the boy in his arms. "Tomorrow will be another day, and perhaps things won't seem so bleak when you wake up in a new morning." Then he kissed the boy goodnight and closed the door. The next morning, Jonathan awoke to a cold snap and freezing snow. His mother asked his father and him to drive to Detroit to pick up Christmas decorations that she had ordered. Jonathan didn't want to go. He felt so bad about the church wall. What good would decorations do? Then, as if the damage to the church wasn't bad enough, the battery was dead in the family car. "It's all right, Jonathan. We can take the bus." Jonathan's face fell. The old slow bus all the way downtown and back. "Why do we need decorations? The church is ruined. Everybody will just sit and look at a hole in the wall," Jonathan said as they boarded the bus. Downtown, Jonathan and his father slogged through freezing snow. The wind stung their faces. After they had picked up the decorations, they stepped into an alley to get out of the bitter wind. It wasn't an alley, really, because it was lined by odd little shops. Antiques, mostly. Jonathan and his father leaned against one of the windows and caught their breath for a moment. Jonathan turned toward the window, and that's when he saw it. There was the most beautiful-looking piece of cloth that Jonathan had ever seen. "Dad, look!" "Isn't it magnificent?" his father said. "Wait, If that cloth is big enough, couldn't we buy it and hang it over the hole in the wall? The colors even look like Christmas. Sorry, son. I have $15 and some change for the bus. That cloth looks like it would cost more than I can afford. He looked in the boy's eyes, so disappointed now. Well, we can at least go in and look. The shopkeeper spread the beautiful cloth out on a table. Look, Jonathan, hand-stitched embroidery. And the perfect size, Dad, see? Reverend Weeks looked up. How much is this? He asked timidly. I've had that old piece here for over a year. For you, Pastor, I'll make a deal. How's $15 sound? Oh, that'd be fine, perfectly fine. Jonathan, you had an inspired idea. Jonathan and his father waited and waited at the bus stop. The wind burned as it stirred up waves of crystal snow. Reverend Weeks stepped into the street and leaned out to look for the bus, but there was no sign of it. Do you think they've stopped the bus service because the weather's so bad? No, it's just late. I'm sure it's just late. It's always late, a voice came out of the white, misty snow. There on the bench was an old lady. The bus. It's always late, she said again. Reverend Weeks smiled at her. Jonathan tried to stand behind his father out of the bit of wind. In my country, winters are worse than this, like a razor the wind cuts. I have hot tea in my thermos and some raisin cookies, too. Come, have some with me. I would like nothing more this day than to share a little warm tea with you and your boy. Please, Jonathan said. We're much obliged, ma'am. The hot tea and cookies made the wind seem to disappear. How far do you have to go today? That is, if the bus ever gets here, Jonathan asked the lady. Well, first the 52, then two transfers before I'll be home. Ma'am, if this bus comes, the way is shorter to my house. I have to drop off this package at my church, but I have a car there. By now the battery is charged. I would be pleased to take you home in return for your kindness. In this cold, I will accept. I surely will, she said with a broad smile. If the bus ever comes, the three of them said in unison, and then laughed. The bus finally did come, and they all rode to Reverend Weeks' church. Can we put the cloth up, Dad, before we go, just to see what it will look like? I'm in no hurry, the old woman smiled. Jonathan and his father hung the cloth right over the gaping hole. Our Christmas tapestry, Jonathan announced. The old lady gasped. Where did you get this? She asked breathlessly. She looked pale as snow. From an antique store just before we met you, Jonathan answered. The old lady walked up to the cloth, took out a pair of glasses, and looked at it closely. I made this, she said in a whisper, and tears streamed down her eyes, from her eyes. In Germany, almost 60 years ago, I sewed it with my own hands. She held the cloth with her gnarled fingers. My applique, my family symbols. There, do you see, child? Are you sure? This was impossible. She lifted one of the corners, looked, then sighed. Those are my initials. I stitched them there myself when I was about to become a bride. Surely, then, the reverend said, you must have this blessed cloth back. The woman thought for a moment, then moved away. No, here it belongs. Somehow it has made a journey all the way from Germany. It is meant to be on your wall, in this place, in this time. I can feel it. She took her seat again and sipped her tea. Many years ago when I married, this was used as my wedding chuppah, the canopy over me and my beloved. Then it was the coverlet on a marriage bed. If there had been children, they would have all been wrapped in this to be named. But then the Nazis came. My people were rounded up, herded like animals. The SS came first for our neighbors and finally for us. What happened? Jonathan asked. When they came, my young husband was torn from my arms. We were separated. I shall never forget his sweet eyes, the way he looked at me. I never saw him again. We were all sent to concentration camps. She pulled up her sleeve and showed a row of faded blue numbers on the inside of the lower arm. I'm speechless. No words can describe, Reverend Weeks said. He hugged the old woman. Would you stay for prayer services tonight and have supper with us too? I'm honored you ask, but I am not of your faith. tonight I will say my own prayers, light the menorah, and share some of your lovely tea cakes with my cats. But another time, I would love to share a feast with you. Do you have family to share your holidays? No, husband, I never married again. But I have nieces and nephews in Detroit. We shall cherish this wondrous tapestry and keep it. It was Christmas Eve. There was to be a pageant. Jonathan was going to be a shepherd in the procession. Beth and her mother were practicing. That morning, there was a knock at the front door. Mr. Brown had brought the plasterer to inspect the damage. We didn't expect you to come on such short notice, and especially on Christmas Eve, Reverend Weeks said. Zucker, Joachim Zucker, the old man said. For me, it is the festival of lights. I live alone. No one will miss me today. This is where the damage is. Reverend Weeks pulled the tapestry back so the old man could see the hole. This won't be difficult, not difficult. You do need to let the wall dry a bit, but I can make it look like new. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. We were all so worried that the damage was structural. He let the tapestry cascade back in front of the hole. The old man staggered back. Where did you get this? Where? It couldn't possibly be. Jonathan said, couldn't be what? My bride in the old country. She made something exactly like this for our wedding. He started to cry. But she was taken by the Nazis, we all were. And she did not survive that place. Jonathan looked in astonishment at his parents. Did she embroider her initials on the cloth? Why, yes, yes, she did. How did you know that? Jonathan pulled up the lower corner. Mr. Zucker started sobbing. R.H.C., those are her initials. Rachel Hannah Zucker, the old man said, and he collapsed into the first pew. Mr. Zucker, she's alive. She was just here 3 days ago. The Weeks family drove like the wind with their precious cargo, Mr. Zucker. When they arrived in front of the red brick apartment building where the old lady lived, the old man flew to the outside door, then climbed 3 flights of stairs as if he were floating. Mr. Zucker stopped in front of number 22. He waited for the longest time, then he knocked. The door opened. There the old woman stood, puzzled. Her eyes widened, then her eyes brimming. She took his face in her hands. Is that you, my beloved? I have waited a long time. My Rachel, was all he could say. And then a sound came from both of them that Jonathan knew he would never hear the likes of again. It was the sound of joy. They hugged and cried, and Jonathan didn't know why, but he felt tears in his own eyes. Later that night, at the Christmas Eve services, the candles were radiant, the pageant was beautiful. Jonathan Jefferson Weeks thought his heart would burst at the pure joy of the season. Now he knew exactly why they had moved to Detroit, exactly when they did. He knew why the plaster fell, why the car didn't start, why it was so bitter and cold that his father and he had shared tea with a lonely old woman. It was all so seamless, woven so perfectly, woven as beautifully and surely as Jonathan's radiant cloth that hung at the front of his church. It was all truly a Christmas tapestry for all people. And that's the story by Patricia Palacka, Christmas Tapestry. And now it is time for us to move on. And I want to thank you and wish you all a season of light and brightness and love and hope and peace and action. And this is KMUN Astoria 91.9. KTCB Tillamook 89.5 and coastradio.org, wherever you are in the world. Here's Jennifer Goodenberger to see us out. Thanks, folks. And a good Kwanzaa to you, too. We'll hear more about that next week.